Welcome to Foragers Radio. Join me, your host, Neil Tenier, as we explore the natural world. Happy New Year, everyone. Welcome back to Foragers Radio. I'm your host, Neil Tenier, and Foragers Radio is brought to you by Foragers Kingdom, the world's most sustainable mushroom extracts. If you're looking to enhance your New Year's resolutions in 2024 and start your own sustainable wellness journey, head over to foragerskingdom.com and check out all of our mushroom extracts and herbal tinctures that are made to enhance your well-being. And you can use coupon code RADIO15 for 15% off your first order. All right, so I thought it would be fun to start off 2024 with some information and chats and insights on horoscopes and astrology. So I'm really excited to invite Sitara Tadeo onto the show today to help open that conversation up. So a little bit about Sitara. We met over maybe Instagram chat a couple of years ago, right when we started our brand. And she was kind of one of our early influencers that kind of helped, you know, get the word out on what we do. And over the years, we just found more and more fun ways to work together and to kind of just support each other through our lives and experiences. And when we started this podcast, I reached out to Sitara. I was like, hey, you got to come on the show because you post these great, great stories that are loaded with all this like detailed information about what's going on in the world astrologically and how people can use this information in their daily lives to kind of help get through it all or maybe get some insights that kind of just uplift you or inspire you. So I was pretty moved by it, and I've always been a astrology junkie or astrology geek, so I thought this would be a great episode, and hopefully this episode will fill your guys' life with some inspiration and all that good stuff. So, yeah, let's get right into it. Here is Sitara Tadeo on astrology. Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the show. I'm joined by Sitara Tadeo today. Sitara, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me, Neil. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yeah. I'm excited to have you here because we're going to talk about a super trending topic, which is astrology, right? And horoscopes. Mm-hmm. I'm super excited about that. I'm a little bit of a nerd in that realm. So maybe this episode is totally a self-indulgent episode for me. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Sitara, why don't you kind of tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got into astrology and overall in health and wellness, because you're one of those cool people that likes to take care of themselves and help others. So tell us a little bit about you.
Thank you so much. I definitely am a self-described nerd as well. And when I get interested in something, I like to understand its inner workings. When it captures my attention, it's just so easy to study and so easy to remember. And I'd say that my original trajectory started on, you know, the path of healing and wellness. And I do have degrees in neuroscience and biology, wanting to be a regular Western doctor. And the short version of the past, you know, 15 to 20 years in my career trajectory is constantly running into these blocks where our current paradigm of healing and looking at the body, looking at, you know, mental health that's now become something that we can talk about was missing big pieces. So originally, kind of shifting away from Western allopathic medicine that was familiar to me in my Midwest upbringing. When I went out west for grad school, I was exposed to holistic healing and naturopathy and herbalism and mind-body medicine. I was like, oh my gosh, we're totally we're missing that thing. Like, people are doing it. People are talking about it. And so I was apprenticing in several different holistic clinics around Los Angeles for many years, which taught me so much, so much. And I'm so grateful. I wanted to kind of see what it was like to be a naturopath, see if I wanted to run a clinic or be a doctor. And that experience was invaluable. It got me practicing with clients of my own, working on holistic medicine, nutrition. I think a big part for me in leaping into astrology was having some gifts of my own and having a very strong intuition, having interesting personal experiences with, like, how did I know that? And astrology was always something that attracted me because there are these archetypes. And I think we all have all 12 within us. And it's kind of like, well, even if astrology isn't real or true, which, like, it is real, it's like, you know, it exists. But, like, whether or not you believe in its determinism, which I can also speak on, it's more of like a timepiece. Every year we go through these themes in our lives, these themes that make up the human experience. It's a really well-dialed system when you get into it. And it's like, why wouldn't I use this as a timekeeper for self-growth and self-reflection? And I don't really think that the stars determine our fate. I do believe in free will. I do believe that we have a choice, which is why it's interesting to use astrology as an opportunity for self-growth and self-reflection. It's like, okay, Sagittarius season starts today as we record this podcast. So we're shifting from themes of Scorpio, which were really transformative, death and rebirth, looking at our shadow selves, different things that were coming up for us that we get to alchemize, because our greatest pearls of wisdom often come from our pain, and we get to open our hearts and now shift into Sagittarius season and celebrate and take those lived lessons and turn them into wisdom. It kind of makes sense. It's the hero's journey over and over again, but we get to look at certain areas of our lives and use that for our well-being in a really constructive way. So getting to kind of combine my medical, biology, neuroscience background, understanding how our brains work, how our bodies work, and our potential for healing on the physical level, I think it actually pairs really well with astrology as this opportunity for us to look at what is intangible and metaphysical and beyond what we can study under a microscope.
Yeah, wow, really well said. That's fascinating. And as someone too who has lived out west, I can resonate with so much of what you said about going out there, and like there's this whole nother dimension to, like, I don't know if I could say life or like wellness, but like people out there like really are into taking care of themselves in a way that like back east maybe doesn't happen so much. So yeah, I know that area can be like such like a womb of like healing and all that. And one thing that you said that caught my interest was when you talked about intuition and you saying you have a strong intuition. I feel like I'm one of those people too, and I try to talk about this topic a little bit on the show about how like our intuition is like a muscle, right? Like the more we use it, the stronger it gets. You start to flex it, start to work it out. And I've talked about it with some other people on the show in relation to like foraging, like, you know, oh man, I don't know why, but like, I feel like I need to walk up this hill and see what's on the other side. Mm-hmm. And, you know, more often than not, there was a mushroom there that I was looking for. And it was right before I was ready to go home, but I was like, no, let me just check this one spot. Mm-hmm. And I feel like people have similar experiences like that in life in general, but also with like astrology. Like I've met people in my life where I'm like, oh man, this person's like really indifferent about a lot of things, kind of crappy. They must be a Cancer. And then they were. So I've always been fascinated by the topic, and like, just kind of saw it as like a way to understand people's tendencies, right? Like, mm-hmm. I think one of my favorite musicians in a book, he was talking about this, and he was just kind of saying like, it makes sense. Like, you know, we live in this planet that's like ruled by gravity, which is ruled by, you know, things happening between the moon and the earth. And like, that has to have some effect on us, like emotionally, it has to be connected somehow. So like, depending on when you're born, gravity is different and different variables around you are different, and maybe that has an impact. This is cool. I'm really excited about this. Before we, I guess, jump into the deep end and like all the specifics, like I was always curious, maybe you have some info on this, like how did astrology and like horoscopes come to be? Like, I think maybe I heard it started with like the Babylonians. Do you know anything about that?
So my scientist skeptical self is open to what really happened and the unknown of it. I've heard a couple different tales. The one thing that I do see being really relevant as far as the origin story is this marker of the seasons and time when we're looking at ancient cultures whose whole lives and survival was based on the ability to be in harmony with nature. So you look at certain archetypes of astrology and they make a lot more sense for a Northern Hemisphere dweller than a Southern Hemisphere dweller. For example, Virgo season is the time of the harvest. Psychologically, to be successful at that time of year, you have to plan. And so Virgo is associated with the value of planning and organization, execution, caretaking, and well-being. That makes a lot more sense for someone in the Northern Hemisphere going through harvest season than perhaps someone in the Southern Hemisphere at that same time going through spring. Maybe they're planting seeds to harvest in fall. Maybe there is a correlation, but a lot of the astrological journey has to do with the seasons as they're reflected in the Northern Hemisphere. So you're looking at Aries season also being like the beginning of spring, and it's time to like get going, plant seeds, let's go, you know, like let's get like shake off winter. Whereas in the Southern Hemisphere, it's like summer's ending and you're getting ready for winter. So it's kind of interesting to think about where you are on the planet and how relevant the astrology is today. But back then it made a lot more sense. It had a lot to do with how can we be in, we're using these cyclical movements of the stars and of the planets to know what we need to do to prepare for the next season and the current season. And then of course, as we know, people were able to navigate and sail ships based on the stars. We think that sometimes we're so smart in our current culture because our technology is the most advanced it's been so far. But I can't figure out where I am on the planet based on the stars, and the planets move differently than the constellations. And it's really sophisticated. Like to be able to figure that out is actually pretty radical and amazing, you know? And so that was like that's how we figured out where we were in space and where we were in time is looking at the stars and the planets and their movements. So I think there's this like inner and outer connection that they offer us. And that origin story is still something that can be relevant, not necessarily to navigate how to get from one port to the other across the sea, but how we're navigating and moving through our own lives. Whatever goal you have, maybe it's a particular career goal or a relationship goal or a health goal, all those things are journeys. And we can use astrology as a guide for that as well.
Yeah. Wow. Really beautiful set. Well said. It's kind of like, before technology, when people were nomadic and indigenous, it was like the stars were like the technology. Mm-hmm. That's a really cool way to look at it. And I totally agree with you. I'm always saying that too. It's like, just because we were born today in this time doesn't mean it was the best time to exist. And just because we have technology, you know, like, I'm a big fan of like reading a lot of, different books on, prehistoric and, before modern times. Mm-hmm. And, there were people saying that like, we work a 40-hour work week or like a 50-hour work week here, but like, for a hunter-gatherer, like the amount of work that they did to like sustain themselves and their tribe and everything, it would like work out to like only 14 hours a week. And then the rest of their time was spent developing culture and like recreation and community and all those things. And, given all of the challenges with like mental health in our society today, it's like, it's hard to argue like that couldn't be better to like work less and enjoy more. Yeah, we don't have an iPhone, but you have like your best friends and family with you your whole life, you know? I can resonate with that. And that's so cool how you're tying astrology into that. I guess I never thought of it that way. So very cool. So yeah, like, I guess how do the basics of astrology develop, right? There's like 12 signs, or, you know, and then you have a sign, and then what does that say about you? Or like, can you give us the kind of rundown, like astrology 101 here?
For sure. So there's 12 planets in the sky, or I'm sorry, there's 12 signs in the sky. And if you divide that by 360 degrees, a circle, that makes each sign, they get like a 30 degree piece of the pie. And so what's interesting is that that's not actually how it works. You know, different signs take up different amounts of space in our cosmos. Like if we were laying down at nighttime and looking up at the sky, certain constellations look larger or smaller. They don't each take up like an even perfect 30 degrees in the sky. But for simplicity's sake, we've kind of shifted and created that 30 degree angle as we divide the 360 degrees of a circle going from like dawn to dusk over and over again, that trajectory of the sun that rises in the east and sets in the west and the constellations that follow, and getting to those 12 signs, because those are our staple signs. Other constellations and other things in the sky move, but those are kind of like our pillars foundationally. And then the planets, you know, there used to be 9 that we could see with the visible eye and with telescopes. There used to be 7 that we could see with the naked eye. Then there were 9. And then there's Pluto, who's trying to be a planet, and people are debating and all of those things. So there's some signs that have a singular planet assigned to them exclusively, and some that double up. For example, Leo is ruled by the sun, and no other sign is ruled by the sun. Same with Cancer and the moon. Mercury rules over Virgo and Gemini. So you have these different planets that sometimes have a double assignment to certain signs. Or in the case of Scorpio, Pluto is a modern ruler, but it may or may not be a planet, depending on whose perspective you're talking to. And its traditional ruler was Mars, which it shared with Aries. And what's interesting is we're looking at, again, these archetypes. And if you're familiar with Carl Jung's work, you know, there's these archetypes that kind of exist in our psyche, and they're different characters that we play in each other's lives and our own lives over and over again. And that, again, it really comes back to that hero's journey, where like we typically cast ourselves as the hero in our own story. And then we might encounter a wise man or a wise woman, that like that sage, mystic, wisdom keeper archetype, or we might encounter a trickster, or we might encounter a lover. There's all of these different archetypes that we play, and the signs are these archetypes. And again, they exist within us, but according to astrology, where they sit the moment you were born can imprint or influence your personality and your personal development. So again, as a free will astrologer, I do believe that it's your choice what you choose. And just like there's different octaves in music, I think each archetypal sign has different layers to it. There's always two sides to the same coin. It's like it's almost like, which one do I choose as an example? Let's just choose Leo, right? Leo can be this very confident, radiant energy. It's ruled by the sun, the only one that's ruled by the sun. And they're such great lovers. And they have this radiance, and like the bash that Leos always get as being arrogant is when they think it's about them and that they're the radiant ones, but really it's just like source and light and love that they're able to shine on others by embodying it themselves and giving other people permission to be themselves, that allows people to just like shine their own light. It's like when the sun is shining on you, you feel good, right? When Leos are like loving on you and like supporting you and being in your life or just being themselves in a positive way, it creates this ripple effect in the world. Now, if they get arrogant about it, that's when they get bashed. And it's just like, this is just a quality of them. And it's an individual's free will choice, how they want to express that energy, how they want to express that archetype. And now for somebody who is not born with their sun in Leo, We all have Leo in our chart somewhere. You might not even have a planet in it, but you might have Leo energy showing up in your sixth house of service and healing. And that might be a way that Leo energy expresses itself to you. And it's not as central to your personality as someone who's born with a Leo sun. But during Leo season, you can say, okay, well, I'm looking at my chart and I know what house it's in, or I know what planets are in Leo. And during Leo season, this is what's really alive for me in my life. And we're looking at these personality traits that are kind of mutable and flexible, but we all go through this 12 sign, 12 month journey of different areas of our lives being activated in these ways. And so, do you have any questions on that before I keep going? Because I can definitely keep going.
No, yeah, I'm stuck in this, and this is great. I just one comment. My sister is actually a Leo. And yeah, you explained it perfectly. It's like when you're in her good graces, yeah, the sun is shining on you. It's amazing. But if you say the wrong thing and you somehow are not in her good graces, prepare yourself.
They're a fixed fire sign, so you can get blasted.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you don't want to cross a Leo. Like, most fixed signs are like the most stubborn. So that's Leo, Aquarius, Taurus, and Scorpio. Like, they tend to have like a longer fuse, but like, don't cross them.
Oh yeah. 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 But that's, yeah. So yeah, I feel like my sister's like textbook Leo, and like, she's so extroverted and so charismatic and like just shines and, you know, group settings. And yeah, I admire her so much about that. Like, I'm always like, oh man, we can get into this later, but my rising sign is like Pisces. So I'm like actually pretty introverted. If I'm in a group of people, like, I don't know, I'm like, help. Like,
you get to magnetize and draw them in.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. I'm still working on that, I guess. but yeah, please continue. Yeah. It was amazing what you were saying.
Thank you. Thank you. So coming back to that theme of where the planets are, like your sun versus your rising versus your moon, then can start looking at planets and their placement in somebody's natal chart or birth chart. These different planets represent different aspects of our psyche. So the sun has to do with our soul and our core essence and like who we are, our deep, like default nature in a way. Our moon describes our moods, our emotions, things that people that are close to us see, but might not be as obvious on a first impression. And our rising sign is the sign that was on the eastern horizon the moment we were born. And so that changes every 2 hours, because again, all the signs progress over the horizon line in the course of 24 hours. So 24 hours, 12 signs, 24 divided by 12 is 2. That's why it's really important to know what time you were born to have an accurate birth chart, because you can know the day, but if you don't know the time, your rising sign can be completely different, and that'll shift a couple other placements in your chart. So that rising sign is typically how you come off to other people. And these are very generalized statements, but that first impression that you get, how you're coming off, just as like what sign is coming up on the eastern horizon is like a first impression, a first sign. Those three placements are typically called your big three, or like the biggest influences of someone's personality. Then you move into Mercury, which has to do with mental faculties, communication, how you assimilate information. And then you can move into all of them. We can go on and on, but it's like things that relate to how you relate to time, where your values are, where your finances lie, how you relate to people. And so we have our archetypal energies of signs, and then we look at where the planets are and where those planets are, like what aspects of your psyche are expressed in what ways, depending on what sign they're in. And then we have houses, which are the areas of life that everything kind of falls into place. So our first house is always going to be ruled by our rising sign. That's the area of ourself. Second house is finances, resources, stability, foundations. Third house, you know, on and on and on. So they're areas of life. And that's why it's like, okay, you don't have to have a planet in a particular sign because every sign is corresponded to a house. And then the planets are the ones that tend to like cluster or spread out in different ways. And then we can look at the angles, which is the fourth component to reading a chart, of how things relate to each other. Then it becomes relational when we have oppositions. Like, let's say your sun and your moon are opposing. Then you are definitely born on a full moon, because full moons are always in opposite of the sun. And you're looking at something that might be a little conflicting at first, but I love opposites as an astrologer because they really bring out the best. Opposites, again, they might seem opposite, but they're on a spectrum. To be opposite, they have to be related. You know, like hot and cold are related, but cold and the number nine are not. You know, there has to be a relation. They have to have something in common. And I think opposites are really beautiful because when they harmonize, there's this alchemy of bringing out the absolute best in both. And then you become a master of something. So if you were born under a full moon and your sun is in a particular sign and your moon is in the opposite, you tend to be someone that has like a really power, like a superpower, like a really strong sense of a particular life lesson or a particular area of life that you can not only just sail with in your own life, but you could be a teacher of for others.
Wow. So, very cool. Yeah. So I'm guessing that you like can do readings for people, right?
Yes. I love it.
Yeah. That's cool. So yeah, everyone listening, start booking your reading with Sitar. This is pretty cool. You know, it's so funny. Like, I always make this joke, like when I lived in Los Angeles, it was like, oh, anytime I met somebody new, like we couldn't continue our conversation until we laid down, what's your sun sign? What's your rising? What's your moon? Like, are we compatible? Okay, let's move forward.
Right? So,
yeah, but I enjoyed it. It was kind of fun. It was kind of cool. And you knew what you're getting yourself into. Over time, I feel like I've gotten like, okay, I can tell like what tendencies come from what sign, you know, it's like, you know, like we said, like everyone knows, like most Leos are like extroverted and outgoing. Like you talked about Aries, I'm an Aries. Like I'm very like in your face and extreme and quick on my feet. Throw me into the flames, I'll come out on top. It's fine, and so on. And yeah, what I want to say was like me and my business partner for Forger's Kingdom. His name is Brian. He's been on the show. He's actually one of my best friends since childhood as well. And we're both Aries, and it's funny, like I think we've only ever gotten mad at each other like once for like 5 seconds in life, and it was like within the last year. But it's so funny, like when we work together on projects, like we could both be like very hot-headed and stubborn and very witty, and we just make fun of each other. And I always come home and like tell my wife, I'm like, you know what, like, yeah, working with Brian, like this is how people feel like when they work with me, like this is exactly how it is. I think I need to change like how I operate a little bit, because it could be a little off-putting for some people. But yeah, because we have like so many of the same tendencies, it's like there's just like this inexhaustible understanding of each other. It's like, oh, I know what you're trying to say, you said it in a very like offensive way, but it's fine, you get a pass, because you know, I don't know. It's just kind of cool. And I think like, yeah, astrology can kind of help you with things like that. Like, you know, my dad is a Taurus, and like you were saying, Taurus can be so stubborn. So like me, I just know like not worth it to go like head to head, you know, back off. It's fine. It's not going to happen. But yeah, I think the theme here is that like knowing this information just can kind of help you like navigate life a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, and again, as someone that really, really advocates that it's not appropriate to blame the stars for your behavior or your personality flaws, but they do show us our challenges. They do show us places that might be a little tender in our lifetimes and different gifts that we have, and having clarity about how we relate to each other or what our priorities are, or, you know, like when people want to have like career advice or relationship advice, it's like, yeah, like you really need to make sure that you're not getting yourself in a codependent situations. This is something to look out for. This is something to work on. And it's not necessarily something that has to be grueling. And it's like, I'm going to be working on this for the next 50 years of my life. Like, you can absolutely understand and like focus on something and gain a lot of wisdom from it and say, actually, yeah, I totally see where my codependency comes from. Came from my childhood in this way and the living environment I had and my parents' dynamic. And I just felt like I needed to please people to feel special and gain love. Wow, now I'm aware of that. Now I can proceed in my relationships with so much more awareness. Now I can proceed in my career trajectory with so much more clarity of like what skills I really bring to the table and how to market myself, what I'm creating for myself, or why I do work better as an entrepreneur, or I do work better in a group setting. And sometimes it's really relieving for people to kind of look at these sacred mirrors in our chart and just be like, oh, this is what I can see myself more clearly. This makes sense. Now I know how to proceed. And then again, yeah, of course, with relationships, whether it's a business relationship, which that's amazing that you've been friends for so long.
Yeah.
And it's like, wow, there is a resonance there. Like we get each other on some fundamental level. And, you know, you just meet people and you're like, man, this just works. Like it just jives. And there's other people you're like, I don't understand how you operate. Like, your communication style or the way you think, like it just doesn't quite make sense. You know, it's really fun to see the patterns in astrology. And I think that it does come from looking at a whole chart rather than, you know, whenever we oversimplify or stereotype, that tends to be dangerous. Our brains do it for a really helpful reason. And they want like thumbnails so that you can like, we're pattern seekers, right? Mm-hmm. Like neurologically, but it's important to not overgeneralize and be like, oh, well, this person's this sign and I don't get along with those signs. So like, I'm not even gonna give them a chance, or like you're throwing shade at them off the bat. Because yes, in LA, it is like really common, like first conversation. I think my astrology took off because that's how I ended up making a lot of friends in LA. It's like, oh, people.
Yeah.
Something that like, it's a neutral conversation territory in certain parts of the world. But if you're using that in a way that's like not giving people a full chance, like let's say somebody is a sign that you've had some trouble with in the past, but that's their sun sign. And like they have four other planets and something that's super compatible with you. And you like get each other on this really deep level and you have a beautiful relationship, but you could have judged them like, oh, nope, I don't do that sign. Like it's so important to like use it as an opportunity to, again, look at the whole person. And looking at someone's whole chart is really where I find a lot of interesting patterns in like fascinating themes and similarities. And I also love just asking people like, what resonates with you about being an Aries? Like what's true for you? Like what makes sense? Like, how do you feel that you are that energy, that archetype, and that sign?
Are you actually asking me?
If you care to share, but you don't have to. It's just a really good way to kind of, again, connect with people.
Yeah.
And that's where I start to see those patterns. It's like certain signs will say things like about themselves that really resonate with them.
Yeah.
And certain signs don't mention that thing.
Yeah. Well, I will say like, I know that people think this and I will agree that like sometimes Aries can be like a little full of themselves. I feel like we have that like complex where like the natural born leader, we're like, don't worry, I'll save everyone kind of thing. And like my life has definitely illustrated that, like in my like professional career, I always found myself in a situation where it was like there was this big task at hand and someone had to step up and like do it. And I was like always that guy. Or like even when I was in high school and college, like any, you know, like normal teenage young 20s job, like I was always the guy that could like do everything in the store. Like I worked in this gourmet deli that did food catering and had like a shop. And it was like, I could work every position, you know, it was just like, yeah, I'll do whatever you tell me to. I don't care. So, and I feel like Arieses are like that a little bit. And I feel like I like to like look at the signs and say like, there's something to celebrate in everyone. And then there's like challenges for everyone. And I think the thing I celebrate most about being an Aries is like, I know that you could throw me into the fire and I'll be fine. But like, there's some signs where it's like, don't do that, you know?
Definitely not.
But yeah, and two, like, challenges, like, it's really hard for me to, like, think about making a decision and, like, analyzing it and, like, weighing pros and cons. Because, like, how we were talking about intuition before. It's like, oh, there's a decision to be made. Like I go immediately like inside my body and I'm like, I feel it in my body and I know it's this and I don't care if it's wrong. I'm going to make this decision. And sometimes like it wasn't the right decision, but yeah. So I know like people who are Libras, even I'd say people who are Scorpios, like they are able to like really take the time to think about something to like the full extent. And I'm like, how do I do that? Like, I want to do a little bit of that, you know? So I think I'm getting better, but yeah, that's my experience as an Aries. And then I always tell the joke, I'm like, oh, well, we're the best sign, obviously. So even though there's no best sign, but it's an Aries joke.
I think Aries and Leo, which are both fire signs, would both vibe on that. I think it might be a fire sign thing in general.
Yeah, yeah.
I think Sag is also like pretty confident and they love themselves. You know, like they love their sign because it's fun. The fire signs are fun. And it's interesting to kind of look at when you cluster based on like an element. So there's four elements divided by 12 signs. That gives you three signs in each element. There's three water, three fire, three air, three earth signs. And another way to look at astrology is through that elemental perspective, where there's definitely similarities between what those elements are. And fire signs rule the soul, they're your passion, your fire, your inner fire. And so it's fun. You're like, yeah, I'm here. Let's do this. That's what fire signs have in common. They're like, let's go. You know, that inertia that other signs have to cultivate is just natural for you, which is why it's so easy to step up. You've got energy. You've got pure, raw energy to go do the things that need to get done. And then you get, like all of the other ones, right? And it's also that opposites tend to be compatible elementally. So the opposites of all the fire signs are all of the air signs. And those are, they balance each other out. Air signs rule the mind and the intellect. And so you have this like fire and let's go and let's talk and let's think about it. And they like balance each other out in that way. Whereas the water and the earth signs balance each other out, being a little bit more slower moving. Obviously, earth is the most dense element. So they're very, very intentional with what they do. It's the very opposite of air and fire that are like, let's go. And then water is all of the things, right? Because if you think about it elementally, it can be a solid as ice. It could be a liquid. It could be gaseous as vapor. So it's like very transformational. It can navigate and traverse a lot of different landscapes. That one's associated with emotion. And earth is the physicality of the body. They tend to be the stable ones. they tend to be the ones that are like, they could be rocks for other people and hold it down. And they also make great leaders. You know, you look at a Capricorn, which is like, can't stop, won't stop. It's a very refined, when it sets its sights on something and it'll take time to contemplate what it wants to set its sights on, there's no stopping it. You know, so it's something that Aries and Capricorn could have in common, which is interesting. If you look at the symbols, right, like the sea goat and the ram, they both have these horns. Mm-hmm. They're both like driven of what they set their sights meaning the mind and the eyeballs, which are in the head. You know, that's like when you have that forward direction and momentum, you're going to make it happen, you know? So you can also look at things elementally. And it's interesting, you already picked up on something between Libra and Aries, where you're talking about Libras making decisions. They'll think about it, but they could almost overthink about it.
Yeah.
And I love my Libras. I got so many Libras in my life, but like if somebody's going to overpack for a trip, but I might need this and I might need this and I might need this. Like Aries could be like, I'm just gonna throw the shit in a suitcase. Let's go.
Let's do it. Let's go. Let's get out of here.
Like I'm ready. And Libra's like, wait, but what if I need to, like, do I need sunglasses? Do I need something warm? Do I need something nice to go out? Like, are we casual? Are we dressy? Like what's happening? And that's where they can balance each other out. Like Libra can be a little too indecisive. And if it's like stuck in like a lower octave, Aries can be a little too impulsive if it's stuck in a lower octave. So they can balance each other out. Like, okay, wait, we do need to think about some things, but not all the things. And that's where they can like harmonize and teach each other balance.
Yeah. Yeah. I always tell, people I'm like that are indecisive. I'm like, you know, there's no rules. Like you don't need to follow anything. You could just put whatever you want in your suitcase and it's fine. And also, figure it out as you go along. Yeah, that's so funny. Yeah, another funny thing too is like I know a lot of Capricorns, and I feel like out of all the Capricorns I know, there's only like one person that doesn't own their own business. It's like Capricorns are like the poster child for entrepreneurs. Mm-hmm. They're like, I'm self-made. I got my business. My house is in order. Like, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's so funny. And
it's like similarly, they are here to navigate those challenges. And something that Capricorns don't get enough credit for is being visionaries. And I do like to call that out because, you know, they have like a vision or an intuition, or like something starts internally, and then they're able to create that externally with a lot of dedication and discipline. They're ruled by the planet Saturn. And a way to think about Saturn's archetype astrologically is it rules time and cycles, and it has rings around it. So rings of time, cycles, karma. People kind of, I mean, no planet is like good or bad, right? Just like everything, there's those challenges and gifts. But Saturn teaches us like a really important lesson for our impulsive current instant gratification society, which is you reap what you sow. And if you've ever read Atomic Habits, they talk about how you oftentimes like this instant gratification and short-term pleasure causes bigger consequences long-term. Whereas things that are slightly uncomfortable now that are good for us in the long-term, that also is like a muscle we need to use and cultivate and practice. Like, I don't want to go to the gym, but I also want to be healthy long-term. I don't want these diseases, these disorders. I don't want my body to atrophy. I want to stay strong. I want to stay flexible. Okay, I'm going to go to the gym. Versus it's so easy to just sit home and watch something and eat cake. And then what happens after months and years because of that habit, right? So that's a very Saturnine theme. Like you look at the thing, look at the long term, and how are you cultivating practices and making decisions now that do pay off later? And so we can see how that's kind of reflected in the Capricorn archetype of being able to build a business, because it's a lot of small decisions daily that cultivate into something really beautiful. And that's their success, right? But Capricorns work for it. It's hard and it takes time, but they have the discipline to show up for it. And that's what's really beautiful, right? Is like that discipline lesson that we could all probably take a little note from. Where are we being self-indulgent, and where are we really focusing on the true things that we value and what we want long-term?
Yeah. Yep. Shout out to all my Capricorns. Good job, guys. Yeah, so I wanted to ask you about the Saturn return. I feel like that's like a huge astrological mile marker in someone's life. But before we get into that, just kind of tying the knot on like the three big signs, like, so like each element like has three things it could be. It could be like a fixed sign, a mutable sign, right? Mm-hmm. And a cardinal. Maybe you want to go talk about that before we get into Saturn return.
Oh yeah, juicy topics. So if you again are looking at nature, we're looking at seasons. A cardinal sign is a sign that starts and kicks off a season. So there's so many ways that you can divide and look at all the signs. So we were looking at them elementally, now we're looking at them seasonally. And there's one, because there's these three different seasonal affiliations, they also fall within each element. So there's a cardinal sign that is air, fire, earth, and water. There's a fixed sign that's air, fire, earth, and water, and also immutable. And so the cardinal signs begin a season, whether that's spring, summer, winter, or fall, and they're initiators. So Aries, being a cardinal sign, kicks off spring. It's an initiator. It's let's go, let's go, let's get it. So is Libra. So is Capricorn, so is Cancer. So those are your four cardinal signs that are here to kind of kick off a season, but they usually get things going, get things started for for other people and themselves. Like it's a skill that they have. Fixed signs are the signs that are in the middle of a season. So we're looking at Taurus, Scorpio, Leo, and Aquarius, like the middle of summer, winter, fall, and spring. And those signs tend to be, again, they're fixed, they're more steady, they're more stable, but they can be more stubborn because their change isn't as innate. And so for something like Taurus, that's a fixed earth sign, and earth is already a fixed element. So like hella stubborn, right? And then you look at something like Aquarius, which is air, which is very mutable, and it's fixed. It's a fixed air sign, but you know, by the nature of air, it still has some more fluidity and flexibility compared to Taurus. So there's all of these spectrums that we can divide astrology into when we're looking at their archetypes, and that's what makes each sign unique. You can look at it through the lens of the seasons, the elements, this, that, and the other. And then the mutable signs are in between. They come after the fixed sign, but before the cardinal sign. So at the end of a season, those would be Gemini, Sagittarius, Pisces, and Virgo. And those mutable signs are the ones that are ready for transition out. They're not doing something new quite yet, but they're also not fixed. And they tend to be bridges. So if we're looking at that from the aspect of consciousness, like being stubborn, being down for new ideas, or being ready to wrap things up and integrate, is kind of the way that you can look at those three different archetypal energies within those signs. And if you really want to learn astrology from an intuitive sense and like not read any books, but just really spend some time meditating with yourself, the best way to do that would probably be to look at that system of what's the element, where is it mutable, this, that, or the other, like what season is it in, and doing some reflection on what themes. And again, this is kind of Northern Hemisphere specific, but what themes are alive at those times of year? What would it take for someone to be able to survive well in indigenous tribal eras where you're very, very connected to the land, you're very, very connected to the seasons? Those are the themes that tend to mark those astrological archetypes. And so you can kind of like look at, okay, what would it take to be a fixed earth sign? What would it take to be a mutable air sign? What would it take to be a cardinal water sign? And there's a lot of information that's like underneath the surface there.
That's so cool. Yeah. And I imagine too, back on the topic of astrology guiding, you know, indigenous people's life ways, like it, astrology itself has to be like evolving to some degree, because I know before you mentioned like maybe as one of the houses like controls your like finances and things like that. I'm like, well, maybe people back then didn't think so strictly about like finances as we do today. So, you know, just kind of wondering if like, yeah, like our outlook on astrology is evolving because our society is evolving.
Definitely. And we can also trace that back, because before finances, it was just resources. Hmm. Finances allow us to have the resources we need to survive. Food, shelter, where are those things? Are they in good standing? We would look at your second house in your natal chart to look at that. And looking at them in like a more like a zoomed out, you can kind of like take that zoom out, right? It's like, yeah, it's not about money necessarily, but it's about how we're able to provide our own needs to survive to ourselves and our families and our loved ones and our maybe our communities. If we're our cup is overflowing, right? Then we have the ability to reinvest resources back into our larger tribe. And some people, you know, their skills are elsewhere. And we get to look at how these things play out in somebody's chart. And you're like, oh, wow, like I can see why certain things have been challenging, or I can see why certain things are like definitely a prominent part of my life and my gift and my focus. But yeah, there's definitely that evolutionary aspect where in modern times, we would say finance. In modern times, we can talk about tech and think about computers and the internet and phones and things. But back then, tech was like some tool that helped us plant seeds more efficiently, mm-hmm. you know? And so it does have like a relevance, but it needs to be like slightly reinterpreted based on the time, because yeah. like that theme is still there, but how it's expressing itself in society based on where we are will shift, as you mentioned.
Yeah. So cool. You know, I get hung up on this topic so much because I'm so fascinated by it too. But like in books I've read and other podcasts I've listened to, you know, people would talk about like how, yeah, Indigenous people, like their ability to navigate life is so built out and incredible in comparison to ours, right? We just use like Google Maps or something like that. But like, you know, we all grew up with that story in school, like, oh, follow the North Star that leads north. But like, what happens if there's no stars in the skies? Like, there's some Indigenous people that can tell where north is using some plants, depending on like on what side of the leaves does moss or algae grow, or the dew, like all of these things that you would never think about, but are like so essential to like, yeah, to living in connection with nature. It's, and to another plant taxonomist that I love following said that, like, you know, basically all Indigenous people back then were all expert herbalists, expert, you know, taxonomists. They could identify up to like 300 to 500 different species of plants because they lived and relied on those plants. But like, how many can we do if we go in the forest, you know, the normal layperson? So yeah, so cool. And it's so much fun to invite astrology into this this outlook too. I'm definitely going to be vibing on that for a while.
As cool. You said, you know, it's all interconnected. Mm. And it's so cool to think about that perspective. I love that I'm expanding my awareness and perception from your interest and study of what it was like for us for thousands of years. You know, like, what is our primal true nature? The ability to know where we are and be deeply connected to the land, be deeply connected to nature, and use that as our guidance system. Like, of course you need to know what plants are going to kill you or cure you or nourish you or taste awful. You know, it's like, yeah, it's like we're so separated now, but I think that there's a really strong call and a revolution to get back to our roots figuratively and literally, because we're intricately part of nature. If we're not, then we start dying pretty quickly. Like, our synthetic environments are super toxic for us mentally, physically, emotionally. And the more that we are in touch with nature, it's just a reminder, like, that is where we come from. That is how we've lived for so long. Our survival depends on honoring that interconnected web of life. And mycelia are just like the grand networkers, right? Like, they're the poster child of how everything really is interconnected, even as decomposers turning death back into life.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, the most rewarding thing for me about studying fungi over the last decade is that, like, it showed me that, you know, nature exists in cooperation. You know, yes, there is some competition to some degree, but it exists to support the whole. Whereas in, you know, living in capitalism, you know, it exists to bolster the individual or the organization. So you're living in this hyper competitive environment that's, quite frankly, very taxing on almost every aspect of our life. So yeah, studying fungi and studying nature just helps invite that fresh perspective, you know, like in areas in our business when we're like, oh yeah, we can compete against this person, or we can create a network, you know, we can branch out our mycelium and say, hey, do you want to be in a community rather than in a competition? And that's always really rewarding. But yeah, the mycelium, don't get me started on that. the other thing I was going to say, was that, yeah, someone I love following is Arthur Haynes, and he kind of explains it as that, we are still biologically hunter gatherers. Like, our physiology hasn't evolved, but our environment has rapidly evolved. It wouldn't be, wrong to say, like, someone who lives in a one-bedroom apartment in New York City is essentially like a chicken living in a cage, because we are biologically adapted and accustomed to having large areas of space to roam, to gather food. We are supposed to live in communities, not by ourselves, and the list goes on. So it's like, we're actually not adapted to the environment we live in, and because of that, physiologically, we're actually not evolving anymore. We're kind of devolving, we're degenerating, you know? So that's why we have so many degenerative diseases and autoimmune diseases. And, you know, not to rain on the parade here a little bit, but yeah, when someone is able to just kind of look farther back a little bit and see like the ancestral wisdom and invite that back into your life, it's life-changing. I think whether it's with astrology, whether it's with nutrition and supplements or movement. So yeah, that's the whole goal, I think, of what we're both trying to do here. So that's good.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I'm really excited because I think now we've arrived on the topic of the Saturn return. And I'm really excited to what you're going to say about it, because yeah, when I went through mine, I was living in Los Angeles at the time, and my group of coworkers is like all we talked about. We're all around the same age, we all went through around the same time. So yeah, I find it really interesting.
Oh yeah, it's fascinating again, because my science background allows me to see again a pattern and a reflection between what goes on psychologically and what's going on astrologically. So psychologically, we're, you know, they say children are sponges. Your brain up until about 7 or 8 years old is in a theta brainwave state, where you are literally everything from 0 to about 7 or 8 years old becomes your subconscious mind. It's just in there. All those little sayings our parents say, like money doesn't grow on trees, or like good girls do this and boys don't cry. Like all that becomes in our subconscious, which is why it's so important to take care of your children and what is spoken around them, what they're exposed to. Our world is what it is. Like you can't like completely make, you know, there's no way that you can keep a child totally pristine in this world, you know, like psychologically. Mm-hmm. You also like don't want to, you know, the harshness of the world, you need to explain it to them. You can't completely shield them from it, but that's why it's so important to be mindful. And our brains are continually absorbing information. And in our teens and in our 20s, we're kind of figuring out who we are and developing our identity. You know, there's these different developmental stages psychologically where identity is now like, you know, as children, as infants, the infant doesn't really realize that it's separate from its mother's body still, you know, like they're still very much one. And then there's these stages of like autonomy starts to be developed when toddlers are in the no stage. They're like figuring out that they are separate and they're learning how to exert their will. And then there's a stage of understanding community and relation and like what's nurturing and what's caretaking and expressing love. And like, you know, my mom made me a piece of toast when I was sick. So when she's sick, I know that I should make her a piece of toast because it'll help settle her stomach, you know, like those kinds of habits as children. And we start growing up. And then, you know, when we're in our teens is when we start to like really separate and create our identity, but it's usually in a social setting. And that's why groups and social groups and cliques and the hardships of teenage years come to be, because our identity starts to become survival, not necessarily from the family, but from a social group, from a friend group, from a community outside of the family. And so by the time we're in our late 20s, our brain does this thing where it's like, okay, I've gathered enough information and I want to make these thumbnails. I want to create these shortcuts. I want to understand who I am, how the world works, what my beliefs are, what relationships are, how I relate to other things. And it starts playing back all the information you've gathered for you to kind of make your rules and like your like philosophy of life. And it's like it's not necessarily like you have this moment of like conscious decision that you're doing that, as much as it is this natural process. And my best friend calls it, she's like, your tapes start playing. All that recording that's been going on starts to get played back. And it's an opportunity to kind of, again, choose, like if you use it consciously, you can kind of understand like what's going on. And that's why astrology is super helpful, because I think it's really interesting that this happens on a like a psychological, neurological level. Like this is something that happens. And then there's also that correlation between Saturn coming into the same sign it was when you were born. Now, because planets retrograde, which means they look like they're going backwards in our sky, but they're not. Everything is moving in its own way. It's just our perspective. There's like a variance. It takes roughly 27 to 32 years, depending on your particular trajectory and how Saturn's going to progress in your lifetime. And that's the phase
And that's the time psychologically when we go through these replays and decide subconsciously what we're going to keep and what we're going to discard. What's working, what's not. How do I make shortcuts so I have a grasp of what's going on here so that I can continue forward in life? I'm not just intaking information all the time anymore. I'm kind of making like my ground rules of how this game of life works. And Saturn, you get a second Saturn return that's also known as the midlife crisis in your 50s. And again, we're kind of reviewing like, oh my God, like who am I? What have I been up to? What am I doing with my time, Saturn, on this planet? What karmic lessons are coming up? And we can use Saturn returns really constructively because, again, if we're like, you know what, as someone that's into astrology and did her best to use her Saturn return consciously, I'm like, yeah, I know that I could see my weak spots. I could see my patterns psychologically, the beliefs that weren't serving me and like wanting to work on them, wanting to shift them. We get these opportunities in astrology. They're literally like portals in my mind where you can jump, you can quantum leap your own consciousness. You can quantum leap the way that you exist in this world if you choose to. And maybe it's a placebo effect. I'll take it. I'll take it. I'll take this as like, I have the next 12 months to completely revamp this particular area of my life. Let's go. Let's do it. And Saturn return is again this quantum leap of who you've been so far to your identity as an adult, who you actually want to be in this world. And of course, we're hopefully continuing to grow and evolve throughout our lives. But the Saturn return is almost like it's like crystallizing who, like, again, like what you think life is about. And we can just go about it blindly and let things unfold, or we can use this with intention to consciously choose what we want to align with, what's really true for us, and sit and reflect. And they say Saturn returns are really like intense or dramatic because, again, this karmic stuff gets kicked up. And if you want to work on your belief around, let's say, like scarcity with money, you will be tested. And it's like, I am wealth, I am abundance, or whatever. It's like, okay, like you could say those affirmations all day, but like when you're tested and things get tight, do you go into this mindset of like, I hate myself, I'm a failure, I'm never going to figure it out. Oh my God, my dad was right. Like, I don't know what I'm doing. I should have gone to law school. Like, that's what's going to get kicked up if you really want to step into your most successful self in your career sphere. And it's like really intense to kind of go through Saturn returns because all the things get kicked up so that you can decide in those moments as your brain is setting these ground rules, these tabs, like these are the patterns. This is how I relate to myself in the world. That all comes up to be tested within the short period of time. And so that's why it could be a little intense, but it's not what happens to us. It's how we show up for it that defines our character, right? So that's why when we use astrology in a constructive way and we're reflecting and perhaps we have a meditation practice or a journal practice or something that allows for self-reflection, we can use astrology to ask certain questions in that self-reflective practice that will determine our character. Because we know that, and this is so famously used with athletes, you can rehearse something mentally and your body will learn how to do it. They did an experiment teaching people how to play like a very simple one-handed scale on a piano. And one group of people actually practiced physically with their hands. The other group just watched and didn't move their hands at all. They had their hands like, you know, on the desk or whatever. And the brainwave map of the two groups after 2 weeks was identical. And of course, the group that could play performed just as well as the group that just watched and learned to play. And it's like the more we visualize ourselves and who we want to be in this world, this is very Joe Dispenza's work, but the more we can visualize it, the more we spend time contemplating how we want to show up for life, who we want to be, what our morals and values actually are, the more that we can live in that version of ourselves. And so the Saturn return is an amazing opportunity to do that, as are some other astrological events. But that one in particular is you get to decide who you want to be as an adult. Saturn return is like you've had all this exposure, you've seen all the idiomatic expressions of this culture or that culture, and you've seen these patterns. Do you want to blindly internalize? Everyone has their childhood traumas, right? Like, do you want to blindly internalize your childhood challenges and the things that you haven't worked out, or do you want to use that as something that you are wiser because of and do differently, break the family karmic patterns or the societal patterns and do and be the change that you want to see? What does that look like? What does that take? So it's a super transformative time, to say the least, but it's really potent when you use it with intention.
Yeah, really potent. That's a great word. I can kind of illustrate what you said with my personal experience a little bit. I think one of the big themes in this too is like usually around the Saturn return, like relationships that aren't serving you anymore kind of like tend to fall away.
Oh yeah.
And the place I was working at the time, I had two coworkers and we'd always chat a bunch, and like the same thing happened to us. We're all like 29, 30 years old, and we're all going through like a long-term breakup with someone. It was like, yeah, like Saturn return, man, we gotta stop dating people that are wrong for us. But yeah, me personally, it was like I felt like up until that age, it was like I kept taking on these like professional jobs where like I kept hitting the same roadblock. It was like I kept working for these startup companies in health and wellness that you know, just wanted to grow and grow. And I was the guy that like, okay, we're going to do it this way. And then you get to a point where it's like, everyone's stressed out. Everybody's unhappy. Like we're no longer we're a health and wellness brand, but we're a very unhealthy company. And I always just felt like we were sacrificing the very thing that made us special. Right. And I feel like this happened like two or three times. And it was happening again. In that moment, I was working for a company, and like it got so bad that I like asked to leave. I was like, you know, like I don't think this is right for me. And then they convinced me to stay, and then like a month later they actually ended up just firing me. So I was like, whoa. I was like, that is such mixed messaging.
Right, not clear.
Like, I don't understand what's going on here, but like, yeah, the crazy thing was is that like I always had this vision of like starting my own company. I was like, I would like to start a company and make it in my vision of what I think is an actual health and wellness brand that has healthy and well employees and everybody's happy or as happy as possible, right? Mm-hmm. I had this idea and I was kind of developing it. It was Forager's Kingdom, right? I'm like, yeah, everyone thinks I'm the mushroom man. Everyone's telling me I should like start my own mushroom brand. I was like, okay, like let me see how good of an entrepreneur I can be. And like, this will be a project, you know, but I have my comfort and stability in my daytime job. And then like out of nowhere, I was like, well, I don't have that comfort and stability. That went out the window. And like, this is, I guess, to like being an Aries. So I was like, oh man, like it feels so wrong to just like go out and get another job like that again. Like something inside me is telling me like, you know, I don't know, maybe I should just go all in on this idea that I have. And it was a very trying time. Like, you know, like I was in a position where like, yeah, I was not financially stable. I didn't know where I was like kind of going in life. Saturn return was happening. I was like losing all of these things, but I tried to do what you said, like keep this like potent moment, just like transformative and show up for it. And I think it was a great decision because I ended up sticking with it. Like there was a lot of crazy times. Like I remember driving to San Francisco from LA to San Francisco and one back and forth in one day to do like a video shoot with an influencer, but it ended up bringing us a lot of business. And like, you know, I definitely pushed a little too hard and got very burnt out. And then the pandemic happened, but fast forward, you know, 4 years later, here we are. And we have a podcast now. We have awesome guests like yourself, and I can wake up at whatever hour in the morning that I want to. That was like the biggest motivation.
Yes, it is the best.
And too, like whenever we do like a customer survey or we post stuff on Instagram or on an ad, you know, the thing that's always resonating with people is like the sustainability aspect of what we're trying to do. Like, yeah, we've been talking about how on this episode, like, how can we invite nature back into our life? And that's what we try to do at Forger's Kingdom is like, well, yeah, we can go build, you know, a huge mushroom grow facility and pump this thing up with lots of venture capital and just, you know, make the world's most potent mushroom extracts. But like, what we want to do is like show like, no, we can actually have a positive relationship with nature. Like, we sustainably wild forage mushrooms from our local areas that are like within 50 miles of where we live. And we frequent these places and they're special to us. And we're making health and wellness products that come from the land. There's like a degree of like tenderness to them. Like, this is who we are, you know? And like, you know, it's always hard to show that like when you have a company, because like, right, at the end of the day, the goal of a company is to, you know, make a product, turn a profit, blah, blah, blah. Nothing wrong with that. But like, we want to do it in a way that we think is actually beneficial. And we're always constantly pushing ourselves, like, how can we be more sustainable? How can we, you know, show more love and appreciation for the earth and for Mother Nature and all those things? And that's really where our endeavor is. We're not trying to become the next Amazon, you know, of mushrooms. But I feel like I remember how that felt going through that transitional period in that Saturn return and all the decisions I made. And I look back now and I'm like, yeah, I'm a totally different person. You know, I don't make the same mistakes that I did back then. I'm in good relationships. I have a good community. I owe that a lot to astrology and just having that outlook, being able to be like, okay, there's a reference point. Like, I'm 29, I'm 30. Like, this isn't a coincidence. Like, this is what everybody goes to some degree. And if you don't learn those hard lessons, you'll just keep repeating your traumas and your bad decisions, things like that. So, I'm so fascinated by the Saturn return. I love learning about it. I know like bands that write like songs about it and stuff like that. So, I hope that illustration helped people, especially if anyone's like 29 listening to this right now.
Yeah. It's literally like you get to define yourself. Again, it's that portal. Excuse me. Where you can shift who you are into who you're going to be neurologically. You are primed for this. This is what, again, it's not just astrology, it's neurophysiology. You are ready to reinvent yourself. You can change more now, like use this time. You don't get this again. You can use this time in the most potent way. And of course, like I said, we're hopefully always constantly learning and evolving, but it's easier to do when you're in that mindset from a young age and you're practicing it constantly and you're being open to it. You know, the sooner you start, the more benefit you gain. And these were all character defining moments in your life where you decided how you were going to show up in your career, how you were going to show up in your relationships. And as you said, you're a completely different person on the other side of this astrological transit or this period of time. And why wouldn't you use that to your benefit? You know, and there's all kinds of returns. There's a Venus return. There's a Mars return. There's a Jupiter return. We go through, if you want to be technical, our solar return is our birthday, you know, whatever season you were born in. So Aries season is like, you know, your solar return, and your birthday is the actual solar return, like to the date. And we go through the moon goes through all the signs in roughly, you know, 28 days or so. So every month we have a lunar return. Every month the moon is in the same sign as the one you were born in. And you might just feel really good that day. Moon sign astrology is like, it could be its own podcast. There's a lot of really cool stuff you can do by looking at where the moon is, because it goes again through all the signs, which means it also goes through all the houses in your chart. And I'll give you a little hint, little tidbit that I loved when I learned from this another astrologer who taught me that every time the moon is in whatever sign is in your 11th house is like a lucky day. It's a really good time to launch something for your business, or, you know, be extra generous, like reach out and nurture your community. It's like a lucky day for you. So especially as entrepreneurs, especially in like the business career space. So it's like, there's like 2 or 3 days every month that you can harmonize your business to the lunar cycles. It's like it's a whole thing, but you know, all the planets go through a return. We're probably not going to live long enough to see our Pluto return because it takes hundreds of years. You know, like the outer planets, those are more generational planets, you know, the inner planets, Sun, Mercury, all the way to like Mars. Some people say Jupiter. Some people are like, no, it's on the other side of the asteroid belt. But those planets tend to be more personal and define our like day-to-day personalities and experiences. But those outer planets, they take a long time to move. So those are more generations. And like how groups of people are learning lessons together to move society and, you know, our conscious evolution forward. But, you know, you can, retrogrades are another really powerful time. So if you're like, oh no, I missed my Saturn return, I didn't use it amazingly, we can look at other things that are going on. Right now, it's actually a really, really special time for Aries and Libra because the nodes, which are where the moon and the sun, that's like the eclipse signs, those are in Libra and Aries right now. So the 18 months that the nodes are in your sign are also really big evolutionary portals, like really big times. You can make so much progress. And so if you're like, oh my gosh, I missed out on my Saturn return, no worries. There's other opportunities and you can use them in different ways. The nodes were just in Scorpio and Taurus. And now they're in Aries and Libra. I don't know about you and what you've been up to since July, but I know when the nodes were in my sign for 18 months, I made more progress in my life than I had in the past 8 years, like since my Saturn return. Like, it's just been like, boom, let's go. And I was like, wow, like so much changed. And it was amazing. And now that opportunity is in your lap as an Aries. So my Aries and Libra folks, if you're like, what's been going on? Like July of this year, so that's the next 18, until December of 2024, I believe. Like this is a real, it's like, again, another magic period of time to shift and make big changes. And it can be very lucky. It can be, it's like a destiny point.
Well, and not to brag.
You tell, how is this relating to you?
No, that's refreshing to hear. Like I've definitely been like on the upswing. I'd say since August. Just in general, I guess, like, yeah, you know, my life is kind of ruled by the company I have, right? And my business partner Brian, fellow Aries, he joined the company in like April and / May of this year. So for a while, I was just kind of the only person guiding what was happening. And I got to a point where like, I can't do it all by myself. And just by fate, chance, luck, whatever you call it, like me and Brian were like, we realized like we should be working together. And ever since that happened, it's just been phenomenal because we've split our responsibilities and it's allowed me to really focus on things that I wanted to learn that I didn't have bandwidth to learn. And these things that I've been learning has really helped push the company forward and get us to a new level. And I feel like this month, since October, like we've really been feeling it like, wow, we're hitting all these goals that we have, you know, everybody's happy. We're doing it. Like all these goals that we made, we completed them. So now we have to make new goals. And like, I feel personally like, wow, I have a skill set that I didn't have before, or I thought I would never be able to develop, and now I feel confident in it. And yeah, life is good in general, you know, so maybe it's because of the nodes, but yeah, I feel it. I'm feeling myself.
It's a good time. And again, it's like, it can be another opportunity to redefine who you are, mm-hmm. especially in like a particular sector of life, like business or health or finance or service or even like creative expression. You know, there's all these different aspects of life, but the nodes are really potent and powerful. And I just want to shout out to all my Aries and Libras listening right mm-hmm. now, because if you do feel challenged, if you do feel a little bit of that Saturn return shakeup energy, just know that you literally get to choose how you respond. And that creates a neurological connection. Your neurons that fire together, wire together, just simply by pausing and taking a moment to be like, oh yeah, listen to that podcast. Like, do I want to be impulsive? Do I want to be explosive? Do I want to be reactive? Or can I choose to respond in a way that is more in alignment with who I want to be and my values than whatever impulsive you know, old program, old reaction, like stimulus response, like, do I want to go through that pattern? Because if not, like I can choose differently and I can have more peace in my life. I can have more prosperity. I can have more love. I can have more security if you're choosing to respond to life in those ways. And so it's a good time for self-reflection. And again, like every season has its gifts. So whenever you're listening to this podcast, take a look at what the sun and the moon are up to today. And it's really easy to do a little Googling around, or obviously I'm super happy to talk about it if anyone wants to reach out. And you can get so much insight. I think, like, again, that's why I've kind of fallen in love with astrology, because science explains things in a really beautiful way. But I feel like astrology is that guidance of like what to dive into, what to study, what to focus on. And you can take that scientific approach to different themes in life that astrology are bringing to our attention.
Yeah. 100%. And yeah, I think so many people can agree with that theme of like, yes, marrying the science with the spiritual, or like the holistic with the allopathic, you know. Mm-hmm. I feel like our culture needs a lot of that.
Yes,
so yeah, very beautifully said. And yeah, cool. I think we're coming to the end a little bit here, but before we wrap up, there's one more topic I wanted to ask you about, because I feel like so many people kind of get into astrology, like, because they're like, oh, I want to meet my soulmate. And like, you know, I'm a Libra, who's right for me, you know, like, so I was kind of curious. Yeah. What's your take on like how astrology can help guide people's love lives?
Oh, that's a juicy one. So I do feel like sun sign compatibility has a place, but there's a couple other placements that I think are also just as, if not more important. So two things that I would recommend looking at for compatibility are your moon signs, your emotions, your moods, your internal state. It's the side of someone you see when you live with them. You know, you can go on dates and all the things, but when you live with someone, you get to see that other side of them. That's going to be their moon sign. And Venus, because that rules love and relationships. So I would look at the sun sign, but the moon and the Venus are just as important to me when I'm looking at compatibility for relationships. The third thing, or the next thing that I would say is also equally important, is looking at what people have in certain houses. So their seventh house of relationships and their fourth house of how they live their life, their home, their domestic patterns. Those have to be compatible if you're going to like live with someone for the rest of your life. Mars, which has to do with like exerting your will, passion, that can also be where the sexual chemistry comes in. And Mercury for communication, because your communication has to be good in a relationship for it to last. I think most issues come from a misunderstanding and a miscommunication that we have, because people love each other at the end of the day. But if they're fighting instead of loving, and they're like, can't get past a thing, it's usually a communication style issue, or there's something like somebody might not be self-aware, but they can't hear it because the way it's being communicated to them triggers them. And so understanding your communication style and your partner's communication style is super important as well. But to start off, check for moon compatibility and Venus as well.
Hmm. Yeah. Interesting. I think it's funny, like, when I was young, like my first three girlfriends, they were all Sagittarius. And for a while I couldn't kick them. I was like, why is every girl meeting a Sagittarius? Oh my God. And it was always,
I was a chronic Virgo dater.
A chronic, which one?
Virgo. Oh. So organized. Yeah. I love it. So good at the house stuff together.
Yeah. We just fought a lot.
Again, double lots fire, extra yeah. passion.
Yeah. But yeah, it's funny too, because I always joke, like, I think the best compatibility is Cancer and Pisces. And I always, one of my best friends, I always tease her because she's a Pisces and her husband is a Cancer. And I always tease her, like, oh yeah, like Pisces love to be coddled. Like she loves if you, like, someone cleans her room, if someone cooks her dinner, like, you know. And then here comes Mr. Cancer over here, and he would come over to our apartment and he would help clean her room. Yeah. Start cooking dinner, always be there for her emotionally. And I would be like, hey, like if we dated, I would be like tired by now. But like this guy, like don't let him go because he's showing up. And then like another, to my friend, to another group of friends that I have, they're best friends and they are Pisces and Cancer. So I always just kind of joke, but it's fun to think about it. And I think so many people are into that aspect of it. And like you go on Instagram or like TikTok, you see so many like memes about like, you know, Virgo and Scorpio, Aries and this. It's like, you know, has like Justin Bieber and Selena Gomez or something like that. Like,
Right.
That's kind of funny.
Celebrity realm is pretty fascinating.
Yeah.
Because they're, but we don't really know the celebrity's character. Like, you know, like we don't actually know them. We don't hang out with them.
Mm-hmm.
We know the version of them that they present themselves as, right?
Mm-hmm.
But we can also see certain archetypal traits. So that's like a really fascinating other way to get to know astrology better. But just remember, we don't actually know that person. I think it's so, like, if I was a celebrity, I'd wish that somebody would say that about me. It's like you see what is shown on my best and worst days because of pots of paparazzi and media. Like, you know, it's not that you actually know these people, but astrology memes are actually pretty informative. They're a good way to kind of dip your feet into astrology and like have a good sense of humor. And then you'll see certain themes repeated, but I think the really clever ones are people that touch on like these nuanced things that like might not be obvious. Like I saw one about Aquariuses that are really good at thrifting and like the thrill they get when they found a thing. And I'm like, oh my gosh, yeah, actually. My girlfriend is like an offer up queen. Like she can find anything for free on offer up. I'm like, how did you do that? And it's like, these chairs are $300. What did you do? There's like a special skill. I'm like, how does that happen? Like, why is that a theme for Aquarius specifically? Like, it's amazing. But astrology memes are actually like, they're semi-informative, lots of humor, but they're a fun way to learn about astrology too.
It's so funny. Well, very awesome. This has been such a cool conversation. And from now on, everyone I know that wants astrology reading, I am going to recommend them to you. So my question to you then is, how do people get in touch with you? Where can people find you, get in contact? Tell us all that good stuff.
Beautiful. So my name is Sitara. It's spelled like the instrument with an A at the end, Sitara. And my Instagram handle is Sitara_indigo, like the color, INID. Oh, Jesus. INDIGO. Sorry, guys. Sitara_indigo on Instagram. You can also email me sitara.indigo@gmail.com. I'm pretty active on Instagram most of the time. So DM me, find me there. I'm down for conversations. All the links of all of the things are in my bio there. If you Google that name, Sitara Indigo, my website will come up as well. I'm happy to talk about astrology, nutrition, healing, mentally, physically, beyond all the things.
Totally. You're more of like a life coach, right?
I do a couple of things. I'm really privileged to have a dream job working as a researcher with the Institute of Noetic Sciences full time. So I study consciousness and work on scientific approaches to what we call noetic experiences, these moments of transcendental oneness or intuition or even like psi experiences. Like we want to understand what's really going on from a scientific perspective. So that's what I get to do full time. Just amazing. Coaching I've been doing for 8 or 9 years now. Wait, what year is it? Oh my gosh, actually the next year will be 10 years. So just kind of, again, like I have the science and the nutrition and the holistic and the astrology, and I weave them together because I think when we can customize someone's healing path by looking at all of those aspects, I specialize in creating protocols for people that get them on track with their wellness and their life goals. So we can just focus on detoxing. We can get really specific on balancing your hormones, or we can talk about the karmic cycles that you've been stuck in that you really need some insight on to break. So again, it seems broad, but it's really like about that, not looking at things compartmentally, not looking at somebody's wellness or their health or their life through the lens of one thing. I think between understanding neuroscience, psychology, physiology, nutrition, and astrology, we can get a really full picture of a person and their archetypes and what's at play for them and how to harmonize for their best and highest health.
That's so awesome. Yeah, we can have you back on and talk all about that next time.
Beautiful. I'd be honored to come back. Thank you.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, and I'm so glad I got to pick your brain on astrology today because a lot of your videos that you do on social media are like so detailed, you know, and they were a little above my pay grade. I was like, I really want to understand. This sounds really cool, but I don't. That's actually why I reached out to you. I was like, hey, can we chat about this on our podcast? So now I'm going to pay attention with laser focus and be able to digest all of your amazing information. So Sitara, thanks so much for coming on the show. It's been a pleasure. And like I said, we'll have to have you back in the near future.
I'd love to. Thank you so much for having me. It was such a joy to connect with you today.
All right. Awesome. Have a good one then.
You too. Ciao.
All right, guys. There it is. Pretty cool, huh? There's Sitara Tadeo. And I hope the episode was filled with lots of great insights on how we could just know where we are and how we're doing in life as we progress. That information can only help us. So if you like today's show, please don't forget to leave us a rating and review on whichever platform you listen to us on. And rest assured, we'll be back many, many times in 2024 with more exciting guests and interesting conversations. So until then, Happy New Year, everyone, and stay wild.